It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Coming up later in the show, a conversation with Pennsylvania House Speaker Mike Terzai. But we wanted to begin our show by remembering a beloved baseball figure and former Pirate, Joe Garagiola, who died yesterday at the age of 90. Joe Garagiola carved out a Hall of Fame career, not as a player, but as a broadcaster. Many of us grew up with him in those pre-cable days when he was the voice of the game of the week on Saturday afternoons on NBC. I'm joined now by author and baseball writer Richard Pete Peterson to remember Joe Garagiola. Pete Peterson, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start by just getting your summation of what made Joe Garagiola so special.
Well, he was just a great storyteller, and I've always believed that baseball, more than any other sport, is a source of so many wonderful stories and so many wonderful characters. Garagiola just played into that, and he was just remarkable at telling stories, remembering ball players, embellishing, I have to admit, on certain occasions. But he just had that gift, and I think that's the reason why he's in the Hall of Fame, not as a ball player, but as a broadcaster.
And many people don't remember that he was a former Pirate, even though he talked about his days in Pittsburgh quite a bit.
Yes, as a matter of fact, probably the big break in his career came when he was invited to broadcast Cardinal games at Camel X with Jack Buck and Harry Carey, who went on to broadcast with the Cubs. But I think probably even though he was on the 1946 St. Louis Cardinals World Series championship team, and he did quite well in that World Series. It was very fortunate for Joe Garagiola that he played for the Pirates in 1951, 52, and 53, because those teams were so bad that it gave him some wonderful material that he put into his book, Baseball's a Funny Game, and that he remembered throughout his career. He actually wrote a piece for the New York Times 25 years after the 1952 Pirate team, which lost 112 games, wanting them to have wanting the Pirates to bring back that team for an anniversary celebration. If celebration is the right word.
wasn't Ralph Kiner on that team?
Yes, he was. As a matter of fact, Garagiola was part of the trade in 1953 that sent Ralph Kiner to the Chicago Cubs. It was probably the most controversial, most notorious trade in Pirate history. And he writes about it in Baseball is a Funny Game. The Cubs and the Cardinals were scheduled to play that day, and they called both teams off the field in the middle of batting practice. And Fred Haney, who was manager at that time in 1953, said that there had been this trade, and Garagiola writes in his book, he said it must have been massive for them to call the teams off the field. And it involved 10 players, and so he told Kiner, you know, that he'd been traded to the Cubs, and he told George Medkovich the same. These are Garagiola's words in the books. He said, "Where's the Dago?" And Garagiola thought he meant Pete Castiglione, but he meant Garagiola. That Garagiola had also been traded to the Cubs. Garagiola had a little more fun with that because one of the players that came from the Cubs was Toby Atwell, who was prematurely bald like Joe Garagiola, and he said it was the first time in baseball history that prematurely bald catchers have been traded for each other.
That's a good one. Well, there's also the great line about that trade because, you know, Ralph Kiner couldn't believe it. He was a star. He was a home run hitter, and I guess he was told, we finished in last place with you. We can finish in last place without you. And certainly the same could be said for Joe Garagiola, who got a lot of mileage out of that. You know, he was capitalized on, you know, his ability to be self-deprecating, but a lot of that came from, it just certainly didn't come from being on a 1946 World Series winner. It came from being on one of the worst teams in the history of baseball, right?
Exactly. Again, I'm convinced that as much as playing on that championship team was important to him, as much of a break it was to, you know, be on a broadcasting team with Jack Buck and Harry Carey. Those Pirate teams were just so bad; they were so awful, and he just had fun, you know, writing about those teams. He said that that the catcher was the safest position on that team because the ball never got to the catcher from the pitcher. It was all hit somewhere. He said he offered his shin guards to pirate infielders because the balls kept bouncing off their shins and not into their gloves. So he just had a career, making fun of that team and also making fun of himself in the process.
Was the team really that bad?
Oh, yes. he embellished a bit, but it really was that bad. They finished with a record of 42 wins and 112 losses. They were last place in hitting, pitching, and fielding. Joe Caggiola, by the way, led catchers in fielding percentage during that year. So, even though he was the best fielding catcher in baseball at that time, they were the worst fielding team.
That is amazing.
In baseball at that time.
That is an amazing statistic.
So he did lead the league in pass balls. I guess he was so surprised when a pitch actually got through the hitter that it bounced off him. So again, you couldn't have asked for better material, to make fun of. This is the team that wore those plastic helmets. Ricky introduced them,
mm-hmm.
and he said that the Pirates didn't need them because no pitcher in his right mind would throw at them. Why put them on base? So again, he just had a great time talking about that team.
We're talking with baseball writer and author Pete Peterson, who is joining us to remember Joe Garagiola, the great broadcaster, Hall of Fame broadcaster, and a former Pirate player among the teams that he managed to toil for in Major League Baseball. If you have a memory of Joe Garagiola you'd like to share, if you're someone who remembers seeing him play at Forbes Field, especially as a Pirate, we'd love to hear from you at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Maybe we'll hear from Pittsburgher Joe Flaherty of SCTV fame, who was on this show a week ago today talking about how much he loved the Pirates growing up. He was born in 1941, and so I'm guessing that he probably would remember those
right.
teams. And he's probably going to Forbes Field in the early 50s and remembers those really bad teams, which he said he really loved. So,
Yes. I was born in 1939, so I
there
saw
you go.
Garagiola play, and I saw those teams. I was an Nautical kid, so we'd get in for free to see those games, and the only people in the stands would be the Nautical gang. There were very few paid to see the Pirates in those days.
But so do you have a particular memory of watching Garagiola play? A pass
not
ball?
Really. No, they all sort of blended, except for kind of they all sort of blended together. One of the things your friend Flaherty may remember is that when that trade took place in 1953, the Greenberg Gardens were still up. They were constructed when Hank Greenberg came to the Pirates in 1946. And even though Greenberg was gone, they stayed up for Kiner. It was 365 feet down the left field line. They put the Greenberg Gardens, they were called Greenberg Gardens, they were actually bullpens. They put them out in left field and shortened the distance to 335 feet. But when Kiner was traded, the next day we went out to the ballpark and there were no Greenberg Gardens.
Well, they took them right down.
They had taken them down. And then Major League Baseball got in touch with the Pirates and said, you can't do that. You can't change the dimensions of your ballpark.
In the middle of the season, yeah.
So they had to put it back up for the rest of the season. So it's odd, the things that you remember from that period of time, but that was one of the oddest things, where they actually, once they traded Kiner, they took them down right away. But Major League Baseball ordered them to put the gardens back up.
Were the batting cages still in center field in those days?
Oh yes, it was a remarkable ballpark, 457 feet, I think, to the deepest point in center field. And after batting practice, it just wheeled the batting cage out to center field because it wasn't going to interfere with the play. Sometimes the ball would roll under the batting cage, but they also had a flagpole in center field.
That's right.
And they had a plaque out there, sort of like a tombstone-looking thing, honoring Barney Dreyfus.
I always wondered who that plaque was.
That ballpark was at that time.
I always wondered who that plaque was for. Let's go
for Barney Dreyfus. Yeah,
Barney Dreyfus, the former owner, right, of the Pirates.
Yes.
He was the guy who built Forbes Field, basically.
Oh Oh, yes, he was. Yeah, he was responsible for building Coors Field, and he's in the Hall of Fame. It took a long time, but he's in the Hall of Fame as one of the few baseball owners in the Hall of Fame. But that plaque was out there. There was actually a game, I think, in 1947. There was a game in 47 where Pete Reeser, who had a habit of running into walls when he was with the Brooklyn Dodgers, actually was chasing a ball and tried to avoid the flagpole and ran into the brick wall and knocked himself out. I think not even a fractured his skull. I think they've even brought a priest out to give him the last rites. So it's odd what you remember.
Right, and obviously he survived. So certainly a Forbes Field, a ballpark filled with quirks. Go ahead.
If a man ever thought he'd survive, but guess where he ended up? In Pittsburgh in the early 1950s, those bad teams.
There you go, on those bad teams in the quirky ballpark where a person like Joe Garagiola would feel right at home. We're talking about the late Joe Garagiola, who died yesterday at the age of 90. Let's go to Bill in Sewickley at 412-246-2002. Hi, Bill. You wanted to make a comment.
Yes, I wanted to comment that I thought it was interesting that Joe grew up across the street from Yogi Berra.
That's right, on the same street in St. Louis. So that Joe, that was one that led to one of his lines that he wasn't even the best player on his block growing up. Bill,
he had a better first year in Major League Baseball on that 1946 World Series team. If you read the first chapter of Baseball's Funny Game, it's about growing up with Yogi Berra on the Italian Hill in St. Louis.
Bill, thank you for that comment and joining us from Sewickley. Again, 412-246-2002. Yes, Joe Garagiola had a 300. He batted over 300 in the 1946 World Series, so he wasn't that bad of a player, was he?
No. He greatly exaggerated how bad he was in order to fit the narrative. He had this wonderful self-deprecating humor, and I think that's what made him so convincing and so lovable and so entertaining. But he wasn't a bad ballplayer. He was a good defensive catcher, and you're right. He was a batting star in the 1946 World Series. He actually hit his best year in the major leagues, oddly enough, was in 1952 with the Pirates. And he was shocked that he was traded the next year by Ricky.
Well, you know, talking about Joe Garagiola's self-deprecating manner, we have a clip from him. This is from his appearance on the old late-night show on NBC with David Letterman.
See, the ball players today, it's great. When I played, the players were dumb and the owners were smart.
Uh-huh.
Now the owners are dumb and the players are smart, and I say, give it to them, sock them.
What do you think about the expansion? I think expansion in baseball is great for the people in Colorado. I think it's great for the folks in Miami. I don't think I'm going to stay up late to watch the second half of some kind of twin doubleheader on ESPN in early September to see the Marlins play the Mariners. I mean, really care?
Well, yeah, but you'll get to see the big league teams when they get the visiting teams in there. So, I mean, that's not too bad.
Yeah, but we have enough teams now to be interested in, don't you think?
Oh, I think so. When I play, there are only 16 teams.
That's the way it ought to be.
I know, except that I got traded 4 times with only 8 teams in the league. Does that tell you something?
Were you really traded?
See, yeah, 4 times. Now, you're going over to CBS, right? But you picked where you could go. I went through life as the player to be named later.
You've done very well for yourself, Joe.
Once I quit.
That's Joe Garagiola on the old late-night show with David Letterman. Certainly an example of his self-deprecating humor and... You know, Pete Peterson, Joe Garagiola was not the only guy who at times stunk up the joint in the major leagues. But people like Marvelous Marv Thornberry, for example, they did not become famous broadcasters. Joe Garagiola had a gift for he spoke quite well. He had a great mind and he could reach people, couldn't he?
Oh yes, without doubt. As a matter of fact, he received an award just a few years ago, sort of a Man of the Year award that very few people have received because he made so many contributions to baseball. He really was like Buck O'Neill, one of the ambassadors of the game. I mean, he just brought so much attention to the game in a very positive, very lovable, and certainly very funny way.
And how did he make it more accessible four people. I mean, he did a show that was the pregame show when NBC had the Monday night game of the week, and they would start at 8 o'clock, and the first 15 minutes would be something called The Baseball World of Joe Garagiola. And it was just him talking about all these quirky aspects of the game. There, he used animation. He had the whole toolbox to explain these things. And he eventually won a Peabody Award for it. He somehow brought people to baseball that maybe weren't interested in it otherwise.
Well, he once said that as a broadcaster, he didn't really he called the game as if somebody was sitting next to him, and he was actually talking baseball with that that individual. And I think that's what was so remarkable about him, that he could bring the game to the sort of common listener, someone who interested in baseball. He wasn't very technical, but he could explain a great deal about the game. He knew the game, and he knew how to talk about it in a very common language. I often wondered what he thinks of sabermetrics, for example. this elaboration of statistics that almost seem to envelop baseball these days. But he was a storyteller. That was his strength. He was in a game that's so famous for great stories and great ball players, there's no greater storyteller than Joe Garagiola.
And because of that, he was eventually inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And we have a clip from his induction ceremony. Let's listen.
My bat and my glove could not get me close to the Hall of Fame. I know that. I'm lucky, proud, and I'm grateful.
And you can hear the emotion in his voice. Clearly, he was appreciative of what he accomplished. And there's also an aspect of his career that we really should address, the fact that he was such a good broadcaster. He eventually branched off into non-sports broadcast opportunities. Talk about some of the things that he did.
Well, he became a regular, I think, twice on the Today Show. Because he could translate what he said about baseball and the way he talked about baseball to just about any event that came along. He was probably one of the first sports celebrities to become a celebrity in his own right on television. In other words, not only recognized because he was a baseball commentator, a baseball broadcaster like a Harry Carey or Vin Scully, but because he belonged on television. He belonged in a world of celebrities who could comment on just about everything and make it entertaining for listeners.
And so, of course, there's the famous story of him showing up on The Tonight Show. He used to fill in for Johnny Carson.
Oh, yes.
And he happened to be in the chair the night that the only time two of any of the Beatles showed up. It happened to be John Lennon and Paul McCartney talking about the formation of Apple Records, and Joe Garagiola said, "I must have scared two guys with so much hair that there I was sitting there with my, you know, bald head." But he again managing to engage in that self-deprecating humor. Before we wrap up, Pete, just your final summation of the legacy of Joe Garagiola.
Well, it's a wonderful legacy. I mean, he was a beloved figure in baseball. You look at this past year or so, and you see the loss of Yogi Berra, you know, who meant so much to baseball, and now the loss of Joe Garagiola. And you think back to those two kids, you know, playing baseball on the streets in the Italian Hill in St. Louis, and how each one would go on to greatness in his own way. I mean, they're both such wonderful reminders of baseball as our national pastime, and I believe it's called our national pastime because it's a game that allows us to do that. It allows us not only to watch the game but to talk about it, talk about its history, its players, and Garagiola is. I love Pittsburgh. I love announcers like Rosie Rosewell and Bob Prince, but Garagiola is right up there with them. It's no accident that when he first year in the broadcasting booth. He learned from two masters, Jack Buck and Harry Carey, and all three of them are in the Hall of Fame, along with Bob Prince.
They all deserve to be there. Joe Garagiola had such a warm persona on the air, and I can tell you, I had a chance to meet him at the 1991 World Series. He was that way off the air as well. Remembering Joe Garagiola, former Pirate who died at the age of 90 yesterday, talking with author and baseball writer Richard Pete Peterson on Essential Pittsburgh. Pete, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, and I'm very grateful that you gave me a chance to talk about Joe Garagiola. He's, again, one of the most remarkable characters in baseball history.
Coming up, we'll explain the long and winding road that finally led to a state budget, and later in the show, a live interview with House Speaker Mike Terzai. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.